Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. We're back together.
Back together again.
I don't know. I was trying to think of a song we could sing.
Baby, come back.
I think that's what everyone's wanting right now so badly.
Yeah.
I'm
sure. That's what they missed.
And they missed. 10 people just turned it up to four times speed.
I came back into town and the smoke went away. I scared the smoke away.
Attaboy. I knew you could do it.
You know, there are so many times, so I often go out to the seminary in the fall, and I feel like I miss one of the best weeks of weather here, you know, or a week or two, and that's always sad to me because I love the fall here. And so this time going out of town on vacation and looking back at what was going on here, and I thought, oh, well, I definitely picked the right week.
Yeah, we went from like an oven to a campfire,
yeah,
like to being in the chimney.
It's wild.
It was just nuts.
And now it's cleared out.
Yeah.
It seems. It's a lot better today.
A lot better. When you have to like wonder, am I seeing smoke now? That's a good thing.
Yeah. It reminded me, I told you yesterday or Sunday, it reminded me of Southern California, that when we used to live there and just getting used to the smog, the air quality is always bad. And we'd always forget because when we'd go back to visit, and we'd think, oh, no, I'm coming out of the cold. And then you realize, oh, no, that's just the smog. And then when you're there for a while, your body gets used to it, and you don't feel it anymore.
And you don't smell it.
Yeah, you don't smell it. You don't see it. I mean, I've been in places, I don't know, where, you know, when you travel internationally, some places that don't have, you know, environmental laws or anything. And I've been into some pretty places where you can see the air. Like if you're in a valley in a country that... in a city that doesn't have emissions or like any kind of environmental protections, you can see the air, and it's not so much fun.
So do people, when you lived in like bigger areas that in our country that, mm-hmm. So do you just check that air quality every morning?
No.
Or are you just kind of just
back then, yeah, you just, this is life. If there were forest fires, I remember one time there was a fire and ash was falling from the sky like snow, like you thought it was snow. And so that was fun.
Wow. So yeah, I'm glad that we didn't have quite that here.
No.
Goodness.
No. So who knows?
I heard that they had to evacuate the boundary waters last week because of the fires. They had to, they were literally like rangers going out and finding people and saying we're closing because it's dangerous.
Can you imagine
that stinks.
How disappointing that is for people?
That's exactly what I imagined.
That's like for a lot of people, it's their annual big trip up to boundary waters or a once in a lifetime thing. And then you get called out. I like to imagine though that somebody was out there like with a friend or family member and they didn't really want to go. And they're so happy, right? They were so happy when the rangers came and said, you got to go. And they're like, yep, well, what are you going to do? I'm out.
Shucks.
Yeah. Be kind of like.
No, I thought exactly what you said to begin with. I was like, that is so disappointing. Because, you know, those trips are, for most of us, they require more than like 8 hours of planning, right? To get all your stuff and filtering your water and your sleeping arrangements and food. And, what a bummer. But.
Well, you know, it wasn't a bummer. Your message.
What's that? Oh, thanks. Here we go. Let's jump into it.
I like that you, when you started the message, I was thinking, I wonder if people think you are just correcting all the stuff that I said about fear of God. When you start talking about like fear of man, I was like, yeah, great. But it also made me think we could do a whole series, and maybe we will some summer, on the fear of God, and then just as it relates to different things.
Yes, that'd be amazing.
And so if the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, that would be that. I mean, that should be, the fear of the Lord should be in all of those messages, because whatever wisdom Proverbs has, it's gained only through that lens. And I thought you did a great job of that. I mean, obviously with fear of man, you have to contrast those two. The proverb contrasts those two. And so I thought that was great. So first I would ask you, is there anything that you felt like, I wish I would have worded that differently, or anything that you kind of had to cut? And then I had some of my own notes.
I had a lot that went on the, what do you call it, the chopping floor, Jay? I don't know.
Cutting room floor.
Yeah, cutting room floor, like a ton. Because I think, and based on my conversations after the sermon as well, this is just something that it does affect us in the details of our everyday life in significant ways. And I think people feel that. And as I was even prepping and studying and thinking about my own life, thinking about my own experiences of it. And then, you know, when you and I prep, we're thinking about people, right? We're thinking about, it's not just this nebulous cloud that we're preaching to, it's actual people that we love and that we've served. And as I've thought about that as well, I'm like, man, there's just so much to say. So there were a number of things. I think one was just the point that, you know, God, we were made for a world in which fear wasn't supposed to be a thing we dealt with all the time. We were made for a world in which everything was okay. And we live in a world where everything is not. And I mean, just that experience of like being made for a world in which we walk with God in the garden, right? And he's taking care of us and we trust him and enjoy him. And things not being that way, that causes so much pain, so much suffering, so much confusion, anxiety. It leads to all kinds of rebellion. And I think that's a key part, you know, of just, we still feel that even though we don't expect that anymore. Like we aren't waking up today thinking that, most of us, right? Because we experience life and the hardness of it, but we were made for that. And the really amazing thing is that we are being redeemed for that, for a renewed creation, for a new heavens and a new earth in which things are the way they were meant to be. Like God hasn't scrapped that plan. He hasn't just given up on it. Satan didn't win. And that's part of what Jesus is doing right now. So that was something that I've been thinking about. That is more of a general point. It's not only about the fear of man, but I think you can see the way that the fear of man plays again in that two sides of the coin, on our desires and then of on the other side of that coin, our fears. That shows it. That brings it out. So that's one. Another one is that, you know, I think often this is more really, again, related to Proverbs in general and sin in general. We have kind of two categories, and we've mentioned this before, but we think of ourselves and we realize I am one of God's children in Christ. I am his son. I'm his adopted daughter in Christ. And I sin. And those are true categories, right? Like, but also the third one that we just have to keep in mind when we think about the fear of man is that we are also sufferers. And it kind of goes back to that first point, like, because we were made for a world in which everything's okay and we live in one in which it is not, there are moments that we experience suffering when life isn't going well that are very easy to connect to our own sin. But then there are other moments that you cannot do that. You can't directly connect it to, well, if I hadn't done this, this wouldn't be happening. And that's what I mean by like that suffer. We are sufferers. And being a sufferer means that we experience the consequences of the brokenness of the world, like both systemically, but also interpersonally, because we suffer from other people's sins too, that they've committed, or maybe their selfishness or their self-centeredness or whatever, being taken advantage of. Being lied to, all those things. It makes us sufferers, and that impacts how we experience the fear of man as well. It's training all the time. We're learning from the world and the environment we're in how to navigate it. And so apart from God's revelation and his character and who he is, the way we end up navigating it is very broken, and it will lead to the fear of man because we'll need to make people okay to be okay ourselves.
Yeah, so that's a, man, there's a lot there to unpack. I think that would be good to have a conversation of, you know, how does people pleasing look for different personalities? And even when you're saying that too about what it was meant to be in creation, I think, I mean, Eve definitely is functioning out of fear. And Adam, you know, it's really fascinating. You know, you don't want to over use our imagination in the creation account, but we also want to use it and understand that for Eve, there's certainly a fear of missing out that she's being tempted by. Like, I want to be like God. I want to have these things. Satan is tempting her and tempting her with this idea that you can have more, that God is holding out on you. And so this fear that God is holding out. And but then Adam, it's always so fascinating to me that we don't always dissect what in the world's going on with Adam in that moment, because he knows what the truth is. Why does he eat the apple? Like, why does he eat also? You know, is it a fear of being left out? Is it a fear? I'd have to imagine, you know, and this is not, we won't know until, you know, someday if God chooses to reveal to us exactly how that worked. But you mentioned this in your sermon, of this part of the fear of man comes with like a fear of being left out, like a desire to be in, a desire to be a part of something. And so for Adam to have his helper, to have his, this is the one, it was not good for him to be alone. And now there's a separation and dividing. It's kind of like the very first peer pressure, or this fear of like, almost like he's choosing Eve over God. He's like, this, I need this relationship. This, I have to have this. I can't not have this, even though he knows he's disobeyed. Because even as Paul mentions later, they'll talk about Eve being deceived, but never Adam being deceived. So then what's Adam's motivation for sinning? He had some motivation, you know? So I think that there's that, you see in that beginning, this power that other people, the fear of being left out, the fear of being thought of, you know, it comes out a lot right now in the Christian world of a misunderstanding of what courage looks like in the church, you know, among pastors, among theologians. And it always amazes me that when we define courage in a way, we'll say like, so a pastor gets up there and says something that's really harsh towards sin or towards other people, but he's preaching to the choir. And I've said before, like, preaching to the choir is the most cowardly thing. Like, unless what you're doing is just proclaiming the kingdom, like, there are definitely things, I'm not saying that the church should never amen what you're saying, but making a stand against the culture from the comfort of your own choir is not, that's not a courageous thing. It's actually, it would take more courage to push back against the choir in your church. And I think, so like, just not understanding what courage or what fear of man. So fear of man causes us to seek to make sure that we are in, to make sure that we are not on the outside, that we're not. And we just see it all the time right now. Like, you can't say things that are going to, I mean, look what happens politically, or look what happens in the church right now theologically, that if you express any dissent, you're out.
Yeah.
And that is a incredible motivation for people to not challenge what they think about things, because the cost feels so high. And we don't realize, like, you'd point this out too, so often it's subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, it's not like, oh, I want to say this other thing, but I'm not going to because I'm scared I'll be cast out. A lot of people would say, well, no, I wouldn't do that. Well, you might not do it at that level, but subconsciously, as you're forming the narrative, as you're forming your understanding of something, you're shaping it and twisting it so that, because there's a motivation there that you don't want to be on the out with the people that, you know, because we're wired for community. So again, it comes back to like what we're wired for.
It does. I think that's why it's so insidious. And it's wild when you look biblically, there you can find it everywhere. Whether it's Abraham lying about who's his wife.
Right.
Or even the Pharisees or the people who were against Jesus being afraid of the crowds and their view, it's everywhere in us. Like, we are just that way. And I think what you just said is why. Like, we are made to belong. We're made to be connected. It's one of the ways that we image God, right? We're made for that community of life and love. But when we demand it here now and in the way that we want it, right? And we need it to be okay. It's not just a desire. It's a desire inflated. We get controlled by it. It's a snare. And those examples of today, like how it plays out for pastors today, or just people in general, being on the end of whatever crowd it is, right? A certain theological stream or a certain political ideology, or even like a national identity. Like, there are pressures that are so explicit. It's not just subtle, right? It's like, if you do this, you are done. Your books are out of our store. You no longer speak at our conferences. You're cast out. And that is an attempt to use the fear of man to control another human being, which is really sad. It is really sad. It's both protectionism. I think the people doing it think they're doing something really good. But in the end, it's a lever that is not meant to be pulled to get people to do what is good and right. It can't. That's what I think is so interesting about it and difficult, is that you can appear on the outside, and Jesus talked about this, to not be serving for the approval of other people. Like, the example I gave was like with giving, but he does that in other ways too. And throughout the New Testament, you can see examples of it. You can do all your loving, all your service, all your Christ-like acts for the reason of fearing human beings. And so externally, it may not look any different than what it might look like if you're doing this for Jesus, if you're living for him and out of obedience to him. But internally, it's very different.
So I think that's a piece that I think we should talk about. And then I still have like a couple of other questions or thoughts that this jogged. But right there, I feel like we should take a minute to dig into that a little bit. So as far as motivations, I definitely see sometimes people get really hung up then on trying to figure out, well, what was my motivation. If you ask me to help you move, you use that example in the message of when a friend asks you to help you move, I could see a person becoming kind of paralyzed by like, well, wait, am I doing that because I want to do that for Jeff, or is it that I want to do it for God? And I think that when I think about that, I think in terms of, well, you know, you had that the first question of what does faithfulness to Jesus look like, which kind of orients you that's the one that you should be reflecting and saying, looking to for discernment on whether I should be doing this or not. But we are always a mixed bag of motivations, right? So we're at war even in ourselves. And so, but also, is there a way in which, how do I put this? Is there a way in which it is actually pleasing to Christ that you're doing, like, what's the difference between, oh yeah, I want to help Jeff, and in a way that's pleasing to Christ, and it is from a fear of the Lord, and I want to help Jeff in a way that is a fear of man? Does that make sense?
Because
I think on one hand, you could say if somebody asks you a question and you're like, I do not want to do this, but I know I'm supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Or this person really angered me and they didn't help me last weekend and now they're asking me and I feel like the Lord is telling me I have to go help. Well, that feels pretty clear that like I'm doing this out of a motivation for the Lord and not from man. But that's kind of a sad situation because it's from brokenness. But in from a good, healthy, like let's imagine you and I were on good terms. You have to pretend, but like pretend that
I see
you
what
and
you
I
did there.
Pretend you liked me, and pretend we had a good friendship.
He's joking, just so you know, he's joking. There might be someone who doesn't know Jay.
That's true,
okay, sorry. I just want to say it.
Yeah. So if we're pretending that then my motivation when you ask for help is going to feel like, man, yeah, I'd love to do that for Jeff. What's the difference between that and doing it from the fear of, like, because it'll look similar. What's the difference between fear of God and fear of man in that?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think because it can be so, we can be so blinded by ourselves, especially, I don't know that we are always the best judge of that. So that's one thing to say. Like, if you're really struggling with that, like those kind of decisions, not just an occasional one, but like that happens frequently for you where you're battling that, I would just involve a trusted Christ-like friend who understands those dynamics. But I do think, so this, the fear of man does not mean that there's something wrong with wanting to do what is good and that would please another person. That's actually, I think, great. So Jay, whenever you want to serve me in a way that would please me, do it. But what's what's bad, like I think what goes wrong with it, what becomes disordered, is when your desire for me to be happy or for me to be pleased with you elevates to the point where you are now neglecting other really good and right things in your life. And you're running kind of like that's what's running you. And so it can be helpful. I mean, just really practically to kind of think about, okay, so in my station of life, who I am right now, what are the different areas of responsibility God has given me that I have say over and responsibility for? So that's a question I think worth asking. And not responsibility that I imagine I have, but real responsibility, okay? So like if you're a parent, you have responsibility for your children, right? You have responsibility at work. You have responsibility for friends at church, like that. But then there's going to be a point when those different responsibilities, and I think you could sometimes use the word calling, or those things, they're going to contradict each other. They're going to come into conflict. So it might be, for example, someone asks you, I could really use help moving. And I should have asked you a long time ago, but I know it's like 2 days from now. Can you do that? And you're like, oh man, I love this guy. Like I love him and I want him to be happy and I want to help him. But I also know I already committed to take my son camping. You know, like, and we do that like once a year and now I'm torn. What I think in that moment we need to be able to evaluate is like, we have multiple areas and domains of responsibility. And you can use these as excuses. Like any of this can be used as license, I think, in our heart. But in that moment, if the person came to me and asked me, I would encourage them, unless this move is like an emergency situation and you just know you can get a camping in with your son another time, take your son. You have a responsibility to take him. Don't let him down because his opinion is going to be smaller. Like the effect that his opinion of you has is less than the effect of this person's disappointment on you. Because that's what I think ends up happening inside of us. We start weighing the cost, and the cost has nothing to do with faithfulness to Jesus. It has everything to do with actually how painful will this be if I say yes to this person and no to this person. I don't know if that helps. What would you add? But
well, that right there I think is a huge thing that I see all the time is we tend to, people pleasing really shows up when we prioritize people who we're afraid will think, like we end up taking for granted people who are closest to us because I know that my son will still be there tomorrow. Whereas this friend or this person might not, that they're going to form their opinion of me based on that. And so it causes a lot of people who are wired as servants to actually neglect their greater calling. And so it doesn't seem like it's a fear of man. It seems like it's selfless serving. But it actually, when you dig down deep, it's they can't handle the, a person who's wired like that and struggling with that form of fear of man, they often end up neglecting the people who are closest to them because those are the people who they know will still be there. They just take them for granted. And so the stranger ends up being more valuable in their mind than their family. And you know, you see this in a lot of, you see this in all kinds of areas. I think that what I would add in that is, so I think calling is a really good, because that's part of what you're just looking to Jesus and knowing, understanding, we, you know, we'll say sometimes that saying yes to something is saying no to something else. So that's a really important thing to just realize. You can't say yes to everything. If you're saying yes to something, you are actually saying no to something else. But I also would say the reverse. Saying no to something means you're saying yes to something else. Mm-hmm. So like if you ask me to help you move and I say no because I just don't want to, well, I need to check my motives on that. Like, what am I saying yes to? And if what I'm saying yes to is sitting on my couch and scrolling on my phone, well, then maybe there's something broken about that. Like, I'm not really trusting God to give me rest, you know, which is different than I'm supposed to say no because as I'm looking at Jesus, he's saying, you needed some rest. I was calling you to, you're going to take this morning and go. Cause that's another thing that we struggle with is it's one thing to say no to somebody. If we feel like we have license, you said it earlier, I have another thing I'm supposed to be doing or accomplishing.
Yep.
But if we were actually proactively taking Sabbath, for example, or taking time with the Lord, where you're like, I'm supposed to be spending, you know, because in our culture, we would definitely understand, oh, you have to go take your son, you're taking your son camping. I totally get it. But imagine if I asked you for help moving and your response to me was, I would love to help you with that, but I'm supposed to be taking that time away. Like I'm going off into the woods to spend some time with the Lord. And in our culture, that would feel like, wait, you're saying no to me. You're not actually doing anything.
Yep. Yeah, another word maybe that to add, like to responsibility, or is just the word stewardship. So like you could think of areas of stewardship, and one of those is going to be stewardship of your walk with Jesus, with him, mm-hmm. and taking responsibility for that. And there's a lot of different domains then that goes down as well. It's complicated, I think, Jay, because we are such a bundle of disordered desires.
Right.
Like our desires are all over the place. We use a kind of funny example in how people change class of this is, you know, it doesn't work as well anymore because phones don't ring in homes really anymore. But you can imagine this scene where there's a father who's angry. He's lost his temper. He's impatient. He's screaming at the kids and stomping around, and the phone rings and he picks it up and he goes, "Hi, how can I help you?" Totally calm, totally polite.
Yep.
Totally. Well, what's going on there? Well, there is something, his desire, his dislike of whatever's happening in the home is weaker than his desire that person on the other end of that phone sees him as a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening. So that dynamic, which is, you know, a humorous example, you know, people talk about their trip to church too, or that kind of
thing. Right, I was going to say, right? On the way to church is the classic.
But all that is our desires, and then on the other hand, our fears, when that desire is threatened, at war.
Yeah.
We end up being a bundle of desires that are at war, and the only way for those to be tamed and really, I think, redeemed is in Christ. Like mm-hmm. there is no other way. Otherwise you just end up like, you know, anger is another one, you know, that could be a whole nother talk, which maybe we should do. But we talk about anger management a lot, and it's really not something to be managed. It's something to be redeemed. And the same goes with this fear of man. You don't manage it. You don't play with it. It gets redeemed and you get freed from that snare.
Yeah. It's that example of the phone call, I was also thinking that part of that discernment process of, am I doing this for you or to be seen as helpful? Like that's a big deal for people to try to untangle that. And it can feel like a rat's nest. And so I do want to say this to make sure that even as we kind of investigate some of this further, I don't want the result from this should not be that a person is paralyzed by trying to figure out their motives. Jesus is not like constantly giving you pop quizzes and then like, well, you only got 9 out of 10 there, or 7 out of 10 there, or, you know, you didn't do that for the right motive, so it doesn't count at all. Faithfulness to Jesus is what matters. So there could be a time, just to keep going back to that example of you asking, you know, or one of, if you ask me to help you move, there's some people who would think, well, you got to make sure your motives are pure, and otherwise you're doing it for impure motives, and then it's, you know, you're disobeying or it's sin. And I just want to say, man, we are a mixed bag all the time. And there have been many times where I have done something basically out of willpower, because it's what I know is faithfulness to Jesus. I don't want to settle for that, but I also don't, like, I can't say, well, the most faithful thing to Jesus right now is because I'm grumpy about going and helping Jeff move, the most faithful thing is then I shouldn't help him move.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we do that. Like, well, if I can't do it with the right heart, we do that sometimes with giving, like, because God loves a cheerful giver. Well, it doesn't say that if you're not cheerful, you shouldn't give. He's saying that what he wants. The goal is that you would with joy give in generosity as you receive his generosity. It's not wait until you're joyful and cheerful. And so it's not wait until I want to help you move. Because as much as I like you and want to serve you, I hate moving. Everybody hates helping people move. Nobody enjoys that. So I think that being living with some freedom and just being transparent with Jesus, like that's where the faithfulness comes. So like if you say, Jesus, I don't know what to do. I do not want to go help Jeff move, but I want to help him. So I don't really know what to do right now, but I think I'm supposed to just go. So I'm just going to go and I'm going to trust that you're going to be there and you're going to help me and give me grace in the moment to figure this out. And you know, if I'm not supposed to be there, I'm going to trust that you're going to correct me in that, but to not be paralyzed, to just go ahead and take a step of faith and just go and start following him. And I think another thing with that is you know, the first question is, what does faithfulness to Jesus look like? Just draw your eyes to him and just see, what does that look like? In your example of the camping with your son, hopefully as you're looking at Jesus, he's going to be pointing to your son and saying that, which is going to mean being okay with your friend being disappointed in you or that person being disappointed. But another thing is saying, motivation, if I want to relieve your stress, if my focus is I want to relieve your stress and lighten your load versus I want to be seen as the load lightener, that's such a big deal. And that'll show up in things like, so sometimes people will ask, like, let's say you asked 10 friends to help you move and I can't, but you really need like 6. And so 6 people say yes and 4 people say no, all of which, you know, in this perfect scenario, all of which are actually being obedient to Jesus. And then you get the help from the 6 people that you need. I'm running the risk, if I'm one of the ones that said no, even though I was being obedient to Jesus and the other 6, God's like, I've got 6 people to help him and that's what he needs. I'm running the risk that you're going to look at those 6 people and be really thankful for them and be a little bummed out of the 4 people who say no, because that's what we're like. Like when we ask for help, even if we only need 6 people, if we ask 10, our wiring is to be a little disappointed or bummed out at the 4 who didn't show, or to feel more appreciative of the 6 who did. And so I have to deal with that of like, oh, well, you post on Facebook or wherever, you know, like, hey, thanks so much to my friends who helped me move, like whatever. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, I'm one of the people that said no. Do you see what I mean? Like, it's just, it gets so intertwined. And that's, for me, that's where the fear of man really rears its head. Because if you ask me to help you move and I say, man, I would love to help you, but I'm taking my son, you know, we were planning this trip or whatever, I know you would receive that graciously. And so that frees me from the fear of man. My fear of man is not tested in that moment, because I tell you that and you'll feel loved by the fact that was hard for me to say no, but you'll also be totally supportive and you'd be the first one to say, no, man, I'll be fine. You go and do that. But the fear of man is tested for me when the response is not that, when the response is disappointment. And to be able to let you feel an ungodly disappointment in me or a misunderstanding, like let's say that there's a reason that I can't come help you, but I can't tell you why that is, because it's not appropriate for me to share with you why I can't be there. And now I have to deal with the fact that you're disappointed in me. And so that's where many of us who are wired to want to help people struggle, because it just seems easier to like, I'll just go and I'll help you for a few hours and because then it'll be okay. But if I say no and I can't tell you why, or it's not a reason that you think is valid, I have to be okay with the fact that you are just basically wrongly disappointed in me. And that's really hard for people who like struggle with that, like with that form of fear of man.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a good illustration of why. So like the idea that we were not made for a world like this, like that is not how things are ought to be. They're not at all. And even that we feel like, so a person could be disappointed because they want our company, not because they think we're jerks. You know what I mean? It's like, there's all
let them down. Right.
Yeah. There's all kinds of degrees to this. And I think you're highlighting how complex it gets in our own hearts, which is why I think we have to keep our eyes fixed on him. Because otherwise, like, how quickly can we get turned upside down on this? And I think you mentioned, like, the post, right? The Facebook post about it. It is wild, you know, how if you and I were sitting here pre-2007, for example, pre-iPhone era, how this plays out. It was still an issue. Obviously, it's all over the Bible. But the way it plays out now in a public fashion is very different. And so the way that both if you are, some people know that they have the fear of man. They don't call it that, though. They just think that they're really liked.
Mm.
And they know how to manipulate. They know how to appear a certain way, but not to be a certain way. And all the tools we have now that both lead to shame and disappointment in people who are trying to help people and they're excluded, for the person who is leaning into this in a sinful way, it makes it all the more easy for them to do that, because none of us can tell when a person posts a certain thing what actually is going on, what the context is, what the heart is, what the reality is. But people can use that to be people pleasers in really insidious ways. And I think it's just, all of it is a, we have to continually step back and make sure that we are getting, like Psalm 23, refreshment from the Lord, so that we can see clearly. So I mentioned that adipsia, where you have no thirst, which is scary. But this morning I read about a neurological disorder where the person is actually physically blind, but they do not believe that they are. And so they need to be convinced that they are blind. Yeah, terrifying. Wow. Jay's eyes are wide open right now.
Yeah, I wish the video podcast.
It is a terrifying. I don't sit around, by the way, looking for disorders. These just show up in my reading. Okay, so I was reading this morning and that came out. But think about that disorder and then the way Jesus talks about sight and blindness.
Yeah.
We are a tangled web of desires. We really are. And anger and fear, those desires can be so strong that we are really blind. We become blind to ourselves pretty quickly. We just are. It's like doctors that know how to operate on people don't typically operate on themselves, right? There's a reason for that. And I guess I'm just trying to say all this to say what you're highlighting with those examples, Jay, is the complexity of it. And again, why we need to have brothers and sisters in Christ to walk with so that we can talk this through with people.
Right.
Because a lot of the times, it has power over us. The fear has power because it's just in silence. So, you know, until we can bring it out to the open and talk about it, it really can be powerful. It can keep you up at night. Like I mentioned that, that happens. The fear of what will happen, you know, this person's going to be really disappointed, or I just saw their post with the people who helped them move and now I feel horribly guilty. Here's the hard part. Even though we might tell ourselves, I know I shouldn't feel guilty because I didn't do anything wrong, but I still feel that. It's like, it's all related to us. And I think that's part of why when I was trying to, at the end, give us some ways forward with repentance, turning, and with trusting in him, leaning into the gospel, but also that training word is so important. That's why even if we feel a bit grumbly about helping the person move, but we know we really should do it, like there's no question in our mind why we should do it. Because that's not just an action of obedience to Jesus. It is, but it's also training for more of those actions. It's putting ourselves in a position that our heart can sometimes catch up with our body. Sometimes that's the way it goes. We know that, you know, our words, our actions, the source of them is the invisible part of ourselves, but also our actions, there's a feedback mechanism, a feedback loop. And the reason that we're afraid of people is we've learned to be afraid of them through repeated exposure to what goes wrong when we disappoint them. If all we had was positive experiences with people, we might still have something in us that wants to please in a sinful way, but we learn it, right? We learn it. We learn, man, this person in particular, if I say this, they're going to do this. I'm not going to say this with them. You know, we learn that. And man, that's part of, again, that's what I was trying to get at earlier with that sinner and sufferer. Like that's part of being a sufferer. That's not like because we are so horrible. It's just they're living in a world in which those things are, that's the way it is right now.
Yeah. I want to just really call that out, because you said like not the desire to not be fake, basically, or to, you know, that we know that it's out of the overflow of the heart the mouth speaks. And so that goes back to the idea of, well, I have to wait until that's my pure motivation before I do it. And if we get this concept that the flesh is at war against the spirit in our, you know, in our hearts, that acting in obedience and doing something, like if you're in a situation where you're like, I know I should do this, and it is from looking at Jesus, not from a sense of moral obligation, because you just think like, well, that's what good people are supposed to do. That's where you get into a lot of trouble. But if you're saying, man, I think Jesus is calling me to do this, well, but even though you're not really excited about it, you're still acting in faithful obedience, because there's a part, you're reinforcing that part in your heart that does want that. Like the fact that, you know, it's like when we talk about when people feel convicted of their sin, that's a good sign. You wouldn't be wrestling with it if you were hardened. Like, or people who are sometimes when they worry about their own salvation, you're like, well, the fact that you're worried about your own salvation probably means that, you know, you're in pretty decent shape there. It's just, so I think not letting the enemy is going to use all kinds of tricks to get you to not be obedient to Jesus. And one of the ways he's going to be like, well, you're just being fake because you know you don't really want to do that. Well, the combating that is, yeah, but I want to do that. Like there is a part of me that does want to go do that. And so I'm gonna be in obedience to that, which reinforces that part in my heart. And that's the feedback mechanism that you're talking about. Happens all the time. And the simplest example of that is all the time I hear from people, I didn't want to come to church this morning, but I came because I knew I needed to be here. And now I'm so glad that I was here. That's that feedback mechanism. That's very different than a person who has no desire to be at church, but goes to be seen by others. That person is living in their hypocrisy, living in a fake world. The other person is walking in very real obedience in this feedback loop of, I want this a little bit. I'm going to follow Jesus and I'm going to do this thing. And then in doing that, I receive life from that. And I'm confessing and being transparent all along. The other thing that I want to make sure that gets called out is what you said about training. And this is just core to following Jesus. It is so innate in us. I just see it constantly that we just are always feeling like what God expects from us is perfection. And anytime we slip up at all, he's disappointed, but thank God literally that Jesus forgave us. And that is not the posture that we're supposed to be. Does that make sense? Like we're just, okay, I'm going to try again today to be perfect. And I wasn't perfect. Well, at least Jesus forgives me. And so we live in this posture that God is constantly just disappointed in us and we're constantly failing. What if it was flipped upside down where he's constantly inviting us and training us to receive more of the life that he has for us, that he's already secured the destination that we will be formed into who we were created to be. And now he is forming us in that. And so every opportunity for that is like weight training. I've used this as example before, but imagine going to a youth basketball practice, or I've used versions of this, but it just youth basketball, going to a fifth grade youth basketball practice and being in a situation where the coach felt like he can't tell the kids that they have any growing to do. And so they're only shooting right-handed layups, and that's the only thing they can do. They can't dribble with their left hand or their offhand. They can't shoot with their offhand. They can't shoot beyond like just a layup. They don't really play good defense because every drill is set up so that they feel like they nailed it. Because we're just so important. Like we can't, whatever we do, we can't make the kids think that they have any growth to do. That would be horrible. You would look at that coach and say, you are the worst coach in the world. And I feel like that's what we try to set church up as and try to set up following Jesus. Like we try to set it up like these drills that we can master, these things that we, because we feel like that's the goal. The goal is that I master, like I do the drill perfectly. So when Jesus puts an obstacle in our path, we have to convince ourselves that the point of that drill was whatever we did. Like we have to win. Does that make sense? Like I have to, and if he stresses us at all, which we know that that is how we actually grow. Like how do your muscles grow? By working them to the point of failure so that they are built up stronger. How does our patience grow? By working it to the point of failure that we keep pushing. How do you run a marathon? By running to the point of, you have to push through walls that you don't think you can. It's training and it's intentional. And a coach is not surprised the first time a fourth grader or a fifth grader tries to shoot a left-handed layup that it looks awful. And he doesn't yell at that fourth grader and says, "You're a failure. Try again. And that's what we think God is doing with us. Like, well, you failed. Well, try again tomorrow. No, he's saying, look, what happened there? And giving multiple opportunities, and we're going to keep working on that. And as you keep working on that, it's going to start feeling more natural. And as you keep going and responding to Jesus when people ask you for help, it'll start feeling more natural when that is the right thing to do. And it will start feeling more life-giving. And you'll start, like, that's the goal. And I just wish in everything that I wish I could get that across my own head, my own brain. Like the number of times that let the enemy shame me or use the fear of man against me, it's so disappointing. And yet if I can flip that in my head and say, okay, Jesus, you're just training me. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to grow. I'm going to keep growing because you are the one who is doing this work in me and you're faithful to complete it. So I just don't want to see, I don't want to see people through this. We can start to overthink things. And I know the person, because even the people who are prone to listen to the whole podcast are people who are prone to be thinking about these things deeply and they want to just keep thinking about it. I just want to encourage you, don't be paralyzed and don't set yourself up for feeling like God is constantly just being disappointed in you because you feared man a little bit there. And don't spin things and twist things. That's why the turning and the repenting is so important. Be like, I mean, imagine if a fifth grader is doing that left-handed layup and they shoot it off the bottom of the hoop and it's like, and he's like, well, but that was the goal. You'd be like, well, no. Like you did fail. You didn't make the layup. That's kind of the goal, but that's okay. We're going to keep working on it until you do. And so when we fail, when we don't, like the important thing is to turn and repent and to say, like, God, I see it now. I see. I did that out of the fear of man. I don't want to do that. That's growing towards what God is wanting us to, and we don't need to be afraid of that. And our fear of that, our fear of what people might think, our fear, and you know, the fear of man comes in that way, because when you confess sin or you confess any of that, people who don't see their own sin are going to feel superior to you, and that can also be a form of fear of man. I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. I don't want them to, like, it's kind of like when you apologize to someone and they don't apologize back and all of a sudden you're really bothered by that. Did you apologize or did you not? Like, do you feel like you saw your sin? They may not see their sin in it. They may not see in that. Are you going to be okay with that? Well, that's hard. And that takes a real transparency and a vulnerability before Jesus and say, Jesus, that really upset me.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And I mean, that maybe this would be a good place to end too, Jay. This was a text that I got from someone that they said, hey, maybe this would be for the podcast. But I pointed out, related to that verdict on our lives, right? Related to God's approval, God, the Father's words to Jesus, his son, when he was baptized. And he said, I have it up in front of me here. A voice from heaven said, this is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased. And I do believe that we all long for that so much, to be pleasing to the one who made us, to be approved by him. And there are so many things that are working in our world, in our own hearts, the war within, to make us doubt that, right? And I think this is an opportunity for us, again, as a church family, to lean into what we know to be true about the gospel, mm-hmm. to what we know to be true about the Jesus, about Jesus, what he's done. Like, it's a moment where we can say, what do I know that I know that I know? And how do I apply that here? And the text that came in said, isn't it interesting that was said before Jesus's ministry really got going? So that voice from heaven came before he went to the cross in obedience, right? It came before he healed anyone. It came before all of that. It was God's pleasure in who his son is and was. And that is what's true for us. Mm. He delights in us through Christ. He loves us. That's his posture towards us. Again, we're going to say it every week until everyone has read it or tried to read it, but the book Gentle and Lowly that we're giving away, that's why that book is full of those truths, like worked out into our lives. And life lived confident of that reality is very, very different than life lived from a place of constantly trying to prove things to yourself and to God and to other people. And Jesus invites us into his easy yoke, in which we are secure and delighted in, and yes, growing. And part of that growth is going to be the moments of challenge where he's with us, and he is training us. And so that, I guess that's my encouragement. That's where I'd want us to be remembering as well, that with all the things that we've talked about through this series, I mean, whether it's the tongue, right? Whether it's friendships, all of that, like there are opportunities either for Satan to discourage us, or there are opportunities for God to speak his delight into us and for us to be more and more solidified in our identity in him.
Well, yeah, you just said it right there. Like we are wired to desire approval. That's not the problem. The problem isn't that we seek approval. The problem is that we seek it from the wrong places, which includes ourselves, which was a part we didn't get to, but I was thinking about people who think they don't deal with the fear of man are people who actually, their fear of man is their fear of themselves. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are wired to be like, I don't care what other people think. That's not the godly thing. What they're doing is actually, they want to be able to approve of themselves, and that is a fear of man, because you're a man, you're mankind, you're human. And so we are wired for to want to be approved of, but God is the one that we seek. And to your point, he is pleased with us because who we are, who he made us to be. And he is growing us into that image, like growing us into being fully redeemed image bearers, to be who we were created to be, to reflect his glory, to reflect his image. We are his workmanship. And so that's when you can turn that to him, that's what it's supposed to feel like. That's what it's supposed to look like. And so whether you think your approval comes from other people or from yourself, I just wanted to make sure that got hit on, that God's approval is what we are to be pursuing, not our construction of what he would be approving of or not, like that he's only approving of certain like laws being obeyed or whatever, but him, his delight. And his delight in us is when we are reflecting his image, which is number one characterized by our pursuit of him, our love for him and our love for others. And he delights in that when he sees that. And that's a pursuit that we can always take and be a part of and join in with brothers and sisters in. And we can encourage one another in that to pursue him and to seek our approval always from him. And it's just a beautiful picture of what that ends up looking like. So we hope that this has been helpful to you. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. You can always reach out to us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or talk to us on a Sunday. Until next time, grace and peace.